The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Time now for Dr. Health Radio, radio's original health news magazine, bringing you the latest information on medicine, nutrition, fitness, and wellness, now in its 27th year. Your host of Dr. Health Radio is health expert David Snow, who is not a doctor, and while most of David's guests are doctors or authorities in their areas of expertise, they do not diagnose or prescribe on the air. If you have a condition or illness that requires medical attention, see a health professional. The information contained in this program is for educational and entertainment purposes only. And now, your host of Dr. Health Radio, the Snowman himself, David Snow.
Did you know in the 1920s, you could buy a chocolate candy bar called the Rejuvenator? It was laced with radium. The idea being that it would make you stronger. Not true. People knew that radioactivity could have near magical properties in burning away certain cancers. However, they did not know the dangers. Radium was, in fact, mixed with paint and put on walls and watch hands to make them glow in the dark. It was added to face cream, believe it or not, hair tonics, and toothbrushes. It wasn't until a decade later when an inordinate amount of or number of watch painters started dying of leukemia that it became clear how dangerous radioactivity could be. So I would definitely stay away from any chocolate candy bar labeled the Rejuvenator. Hey, we are your active radio rejuvenator, not a radioactive rejuvenator, because we want you to feel rejuvenated without the radioactive side effects. Aloha, good morning, and welcome once again to the healthiest 2 hours on radio. It's the Snowman with you, David Snow, keeping you cool and healthy, as we do it each and every week at this time here on the program. And we thank you so very much for joining us and making us a part of your weekend. Speaking of chocolate, well, sweets and candy bar in particular, Gary Taubes is our guest this hour. The Case Against Sugar is his new book. He's also the author of a couple other best-selling books, Why We Get Fat and Good Calories, Bad Calories. And he'll talk about just how deleterious to our health sugar can be. We'll talk about the different types of sugar, if there's any differences, how it's just insidious in our food supply. It's ubiquitous, I should say. And we'll talk about all the effects as it pertains to our health, and some of the statistics and evidence, and also evidence of cover-ups by different industries and organizations to help in a matter of suppressing that information. And he has lots of information, and he exposes it all, and we'll have it all for you in this hour of the program with Gary Taubes, the new book, The Case Against Sugar. Well, here's a recipe for a healthy way to start the day. Anti-heart attack stack. I'm talking about a stack of pancakes, buckwheat pancakes in particular, one of my favorites. This, I'm not going to give you the recipe because it would be too take too much time, but basically it has buckwheat flour, rice flour, of course baking powder and egg, and then the different accompaniments. Chestnut mushrooms, an avocado, a lemon. So, you know, it's really making your breakfast a lot healthier. As I always say, eat dinner for breakfast, and eat your main meal earlier in the day, and you're going to be a lot healthier. Now, if you're on a gluten-free diet, buckwheat, despite its name, is gluten-free. It's not a grain of the same name. It's actually, I think it's classified as a grass, kind of like wild rice is not a rice, it's grass. But you have to be sure, if you're buying buckwheat pancake mix or flour, you have to be sure it's 100% buckwheat. Like soba noodles, the Japanese soba noodles, the highest quality ones, but also the most expensive ones, are 100% buckwheat or the soba. But the most of the ones on the market and the ones you order in restaurants are, you know, maybe 10%, 30% buckwheat, and the rest is white flour. Like the Aunt Jemima brand premix, which is probably the most popular buckwheat mix in stores or other brands, are usually mostly wheat flour with some buckwheat added, so it gives you that visual appearance and then does have added flavor. But even those are healthier than the white pancake mixes, so why not make a buckwheat buttermilk pancake mix and add some avocado and sautéed mushrooms to the top of it? All right, that looks good. I'm looking at a picture of it, and my mouth is watering. I'm salivating. Hey, today is Umbrella Day. you know, we have been having off and on rains during the winter months, as usual. Tomorrow being Don't Cry Over Spilled Milk Day. That's good. Good thing to adhere to. Yesterday was National Pizza Day. Why wasn't it last Sunday? For, you know, whatever day the Super Bowl is, they should just make that National Pizza Day, because that's when most pizzas are sold. The single biggest day of the year where pizza sales are skyrocket is Super Bowl. And tomorrow is Make a Friend Day. That's a good idea. Of course, coming up next or this coming Wednesday is Valentine's Day. And so we'll have some information for you on love and sexual health, or sex as it relates to health, in next hour's program from our regular segment of that particular feature. All right. And straight ahead in the news, is obesity contagious? A new study is compelling. Also in the food pharmacy, three foods for a healthier heart, and how exercise helps caregivers cope. Details to these stories and much more coming up on the Health Outline News as Dr. Health Radio continues.
Child obesity rates in the U.S. are increasing at an alarming rate, with over 15% of children considered obese, twice the amount as in 1975. Proper diet is essential for weight control, and 5 servings of fruit and vegetables each day can make a positive impact. Fresh peaches, plums, and nectarines, for example, contain vitamins A and C, as well as potassium and fiber. They also contain antioxidants, including beta-carotene, that help maintain eye health. Parents can play a big role in helping children achieve a healthy diet.
I love it when my mom gives me fresh fruit. It's fun to try her smoothies. And I like it when she makes peanut butter sandwiches with peaches, plums, or nectarines instead of jam. Also, my mom knows how to freeze fruit and store it in a plastic bag for treats that are perfect for a hot summer day.
For a free brochure, visit www.eatcaliforniafruit.com.
Noni has been used by Polynesians and Hawaiians for over 2,000 years as their main medicinal plant. Now our new products bring the power of Noni fruit to you in a pleasant-to-use form. Noni fruit leather is made from pure, organic, unfermented fruit and offers relief for many health problems inside and out. Our soothing lavender Noni lotion helps with pain, skin ailments, and sports injuries. Noni fruit leather and lavender Noni lotion are available online or at most health food stores. Try our Noni lotion and fruit leather for improved health and energy.
For current health news from around the world, Hawaii depends on the HLTH Health News Network. Time now for the Health Hotline News.
New study bolsters the case that obesity can be contagious. You know, it sounds like a crazy idea, the idea that fatness can spread like the flu, right? But this is from the journal JAMA Pediatrics. They found that, well, this theory is based on observations by Dr. Nicholas Christakis of Yale, and also a researcher at UC San Diego. And they found that different kinds of behavior appear to propagate through social networks. Well, they mapped out friend and family relationships among 3 generations of people. And what did they find? Well, things like smoking and happiness and divorce seemed to spread as if they were contagious. Now, obesity was one of the first social contagions that they identified. And this was back 10 years ago in a study at the New England Journal of Medicine. They reported that if a person's friend, sibling, or spouse became obese in a certain period, the chances that he or she would become obese as well increased by 37 to 57%. And a pair of economists realized that the military had done something quite similar by assigning servicemen and women to live on army bases across the country. Well, after adjusting for factors like age, sex, education, military rank, and so on, researchers found that members of military families were more likely to be overweight or obese if they had been deployed to a county where obesity was more of a norm. Isn't that interesting? So, you know, your environment does affect your health in more ways than sometimes we realize. Our quote of the week, nursing is not just an art, it has a heart. Of course, this being National Heart Month, I thought that was a good quote. Nursing is not just an art, it does have a heart. And nursing is not just a science, it has a conscience. This is interesting. One in two, this is a British study of 298 overweight people with type 2 diabetes. And one in two, nearly half, were cured, meaning that they regained normal levels of blood sugar without taking any medication, cured of their diabetes by losing weight. And around 30 pounds was the effective amount of weight loss to achieve that result. Right, Mom's Sweet Tooth, and we're going to be talking to our guest, Gary Taubes, in just a few minutes on the case against sugar. But this is really interesting. Mom's Sweet Tooth may spur kid allergies. The idea of a pregnant woman eating for two may have lasting consequences. British researchers have discovered a link between maternal sugar consumption and the risk of a child developing allergies, you know, her child after she bears, after she has the baby, developing allergies and asthma. So a study by London's Queen Mary University based their findings on data taken from more than 9,000 mother-child pairs. You know, this is huge news because the association held even after the children's own sugar intakes were taken into consideration. 38% more likely to develop respiratory difficulties if the mother ate sugar and consequences to the kids. All right, we don't have time for the heart healthy foods. We'll have that next week, but we have more information for your good health as it relates to sugar and your health coming up right after this as Dr. Health Radio continues.
Do you sometimes suffer from gas, bloating, indigestion, constipation, diarrhea, or irritable bowel syndrome? You need to know about the Friendly Foursome. Master Supplements, the leaders in safe and effective intestinal health products, offer four supplements that may reinvent your intestinal tract. First, there's Theralac, America's fastest acting medical strength probiotic. Find out why Theralac's regular customers become, well, regular customers. Just go to theralac.com for more information. Then there's True Fiber, clinically proven to improve regularity as well as lowering cholesterol. True Fiber is also uniquely formulated to stimulate probiotics. Third in the Friendly Foursome is Enzylase, the strongest enzyme available. With high potencies of 12 different digestive enzymes, Enzylase makes short work of fatty meals and dairy products, as well as normally gas-producing foods such as beans. Finally, there's True Flora, the fastest-acting bio-cleansing probiotic. True Flora is so potent, the recommended dose is only 2 per week. This is the premier traveler's supplement. Don't go on a trip without taking True Flora. See the Friendly Foursome of Master Supplement products at your favorite natural food store. Theralac, True Fiber, Enzylase, and True Flora for the best intestinal health of your life.
Curcumin-rich Theracurmin from Natural Factors is a special form of curcumin, the yellow pigment of turmeric that has shown many wondrous health benefits. Theracurmin represents a major scientific breakthrough. Clinical studies show that when it comes to absorption, Theracurmin is by far number one. Finally, the powerful health benefits of curcumin can be realized with curcumin-rich Theracurmin. To learn more, visit naturalfactors.com.
Copycats? They're out there. Be strong and healthy. Tune in to the big dog. Dr. Health Radio, Radio's original health news magazine.
Oh, that's the problem. Too many spoonfuls of sugar. Hey, speaking of sugar, this is unbelievable. Listen to this. As a result of rising corn prices, now, as you know, corn, or you may know that corn, most of it that's raised is fed to livestock. Well, some farmers now supplement cattle feed with candy, such as Skittles, they say, practically pure sugar, if I recall that particular candy, as a way to provide a cheaper source of carbohydrates for cows. A Skittles sugar supplement. Oh, my. So even our livestock is fed sugar. There's no escaping it. Well, in this hour of the program, Gary Taubes, the author of the new The Case Against Sugar book, is our guest this hour. He's also the author of the best-selling book, Why We Get Fat and Good Calories, Bad Calories. And we welcome him to the Dr. Health Radio microphones this morning. Good morning, Gary. How the health are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Now, we're not so healthy when we eat too much sugar, but, you know, sugar, salt, and fat, we all know too much of any of them are bad for us, but how much is too much, or maybe I should ask, how little is too much?
Well, that's a question I wrestle with at the end of my book, although I have to say, you know, I started my career as an investigative journalist writing about nutrition back in the late 90s, and the first two investigations I did for the journal Science. The first was 9 months, and the second was a year long. A year on a single story was on this question of whether salt, we eat too much salt, and whether we eat too much fat.
Ah.
And the answer to both of those was not actually, if you look at the evidence.
Mm.
And that's what got me into everything that followed, because the science was so bad, supporting this idea that salt causes hypertension and fat causes heart disease, that I then started wondering, geez, I wonder what else is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and how many years ago was that?
What's that?
How many years ago was that study?
The salt investigation was, I think, 1999.
Oh, okay.
And then I spent a year, 2000, writing about fat. I one of the worst scientists I'd ever interviewed in my life, and I actually wrote a book called Bad Science. So, I mean, I'd like to think I know from bad scientists. One of the worst I'd ever interviewed took credit not just for getting Americans on the low-salt diet we've been told to eat since the 1980s, but getting them on the low-fat diet.
Mm.
And that's when I started thinking, boy, if you might, this guy was involved in any substantive way, there's clearly a story there.
Well, you know, Dr. Frederick Steer, I'm sure you know the name back when. He was actually paid. He was on the payroll of the sugar industry, right, to kind of minimize the dangers of sugar. Tell us about that and the background.
Well, this is, you know, what happened in the sugar industry starts getting hammered in the 1950s, basically. Once artificial sweeteners are being used for diet sodas, and people other than diabetics are buying diet sodas, and suddenly the industry's got a problem because they're losing market share to cyclamates and saccharin. So they have this lobbying research organization called the Sugar Association, and one of the things they do is they start funding researchers to try and find anything that could be wrong about cyclamates and saccharin. So these researchers at these obscure research institutions start, you know, basically like they'll feed rats the equivalent of 60 cans a day of artificial sweeteners and then hope that they have birth defects when they get pregnant because the, you know, this is following the cyclamate scan, thalidomide.
Oh, okay, right. Back in the 50s.
And, yeah, so they thought if they could demonstrate that artificial sweeteners cause birth defects, you know, boy, they can get them off the market.
Mm-hmm.
They did, and eventually they found a strain of rats that seemed to get bladder cancer from cyclamate, so they got cyclamate banned. But in this process, there was also in the 1960s, there were two major nutritional research trends. So one was the one we ended up living with was the researchers who decided that saturated fat was the cause of heart disease. So animal fats, you know, raise our cholesterol and that clogs our arteries. And you'll still read people today talking about artery clogging saturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
And that was this sort of American hypothesis, and all the research funding in the U.S. was going to test that idea. And on the British side, you had some British researchers saying, no, it's not the fat, it's the sugar and the white flour. And you look all around the world at all these different populations, and anytime they start eating sugar and white flour, they start getting obese and diabetic and heart disease. So the sugar industry had to deal with that, even though these were European researchers, the most influential British nutritionists. They were kind of seen as fringe figures. So what the Sugar Association did is they paid their friends at Harvard, and they'd been friends, this guy Fred Stair, whom you mentioned, founded the nutrition department at Harvard in around 1942, the first dedicated nutrition department in America. And Stair had been getting money to do from the sugar industry for his department to do research since 1942. And I think he legitimately believed that fat was the problem and that sugar was benign. Mm-hmm. But they paid him and one of his colleagues to write an article saying fat, a very influential article saying, you know, it's saturated fat that's killing us, not sugar. And then in the 1970s, when these British researchers were getting even more play with their idea that sugar is the problem, they launched the Sugar Association launched a public relations campaign, and they hired, again, Stair, who in turn hired all these sort of anti-fat researchers to write this huge report called Sugar in the Diet of Man that, you know, just over and over again said, fat's the problem, fat's the problem, fat's the problem, it's not sugar. Uh-huh. And so by 1980, we come away with this idea, you know, we had all been convinced that a healthy diet's a low-fat diet and sugar's kind of benign. And even the American Heart Association was putting out, like, I have a copy of a cookbook they put out in the 90s that's, you could still buy on Amazon used. That's, you know, a low-fat, healthy diet cookbook that includes, you know, chapter after chapter on desserts that are full of sugar but are low in fat.
So right.
They're fine. Uh-huh. You know, heart-healthy diet foods.
And by the way, speaking of the American Heart Association, we just had the president-elect here in Hawaii of the American Heart Association, cardiologist Dr. Kahealani Rivera, last week. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the American Heart Association recommends, 10% or less than 10% of your total calories to be derived from sugar?
Well, this is, they have finally gotten on the sugar bandwagon, for lack of a better word. They're still pushing low-fat diets and low-saturated fat diets, as they always have, but beginning about half a dozen years ago, they've started they've sort of copped to the fact that sugar's a problem too. They think it's a problem mostly because it's just this idea that it's empty calories, which is a different argument than I make in my books. So the idea is it's empty of vitamins and minerals and it's got calories in it, and so we just overconsume and that makes you fat, and then once you're fat you're at increased risk of heart disease. That's kind of the thinking. I argue that that's biologically naive, and that sugar is it's a unique chemical compound that we metabolize differently than any other compound we consume. So when you eat white bread or starches, potatoes, pasta, you know, grains, they break down to this carbohydrate glucose. And then the glucose is transported into your bloodstream, and your blood sugar is technically blood glucose, so it raises blood sugar, and then you metabolize that glucose in virtually every cell in your body. Sugar is half glucose, half fructose.
You're talking about table sugar.
Right. High fructose corn syrup also is roughly half glucose, half fructose. Fructose, known as fruit sugar, but it's the sweetest of the carbohydrates, so that's what makes sugar sweeter than a potato. You know, when a banana ripens, it goes from being a starchy vegetable that's mostly carbs to being, you know, you increase the ripening process, increases the sugar content, and eventually end up with something that's almost too sweet to eat. So the sugar has got this fructose molecule, and the fructose is metabolized in your liver. It's been known for 100 years, but nobody really cared. As it turns out, you could think of it as our bodies are sort of evolved to deal with the sugar content in fruit. And they would see the fruit a couple months a year when it ripened. And that sugar is, you know, a small percentage of the fruit in the wild. And certainly before we started, you know, raising and breeding fruit to be as sweet as possible.
Right.
And so you'd get a little bit of sugar. It's bound up in all this fiber in the fruit, and it would take you a long time to digest it. And if you ate, say, maybe, you know, apples are suddenly in season, so you eat 3 or 4 apples in a day, it takes you, you know, an hour or two to digest the apples, and you get this trickle of fructose onto your liver.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take those apples now and you convert it into apple juice, and it's about the 8-ounce glass of apple juice, about the sugar content of 4 apples. Now you can drink the apple juice in a minute. You digest it instantaneously because there's no fiber. It's just a liquid.
That's
and the
right.
fructose is dumped on your liver, and your liver just wasn't designed to handle that kind of thing.
So it's those dangerous S's, the sodas, the Slurpees, even the smoothies that are really getting to our health as far as damaging not only liver but possibly exacerbating or causing diabetes, things like that, metabolic disorders. Is that
well? That's the idea. There's a lot of evidence suggesting that the type 2 diabetes, the kind that associates with obesity and age, that's technically, the defect in type 2 diabetes is insulin resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
And there's a significant amount of evidence now suggesting that insulin resistance starts in the liver. And it starts with the accumulation of fat in the liver.
Uh-huh.
And when we dump fructose on the liver in quantities our liver wasn't designed to deal with, what our liver does is convert that fructose into fat. So the way I describe this in my book, it's like, sugar's at the scene of the crime when populations become obese and diabetic. So one of the frightening observations in the world is that anytime a population transitions from whatever their native diet was to a Western diet and lifestyle, they experience these epidemics of obesity and diabetes. And the obesity and diabetes are both disorders of insulin resistance that was established in the early 1960s.
Right. Gary, I need to stop you for our bottom of the hour break, and I want you to continue that conversation when we come back, not only about diabetes and obesity, as Dr. Robert Atkins, who we had on every year when he was alive, he used to call it diobesity, but also other maladies of sugar consumption, everything from tooth decay to high blood pressure and dementia, even that. So we'll talk much more about sugar as it relates to disease. My guest, Gary Taubes, the author of the new book, The Case Against Sugar, also the author of other best-selling books, and we'll tell you how to get those books when we return. Also, I want to ask you, Gary, a little later in the program about details on sugar alcohols and sugar substitutes like stevia, and what about artificial sweeteners, aspartame and the like, sucralose and so on. So much more information to come for your good health here on Dr. Health. Stick around if you want to stay healthy.
With all the news about side effects of prescription and OTC anti-inflammatories, just launched is Xanthosin, a very potent yet safe anti-inflammatory supplement for health and longevity. Xanthosin is the result of decades of research on the natural compound astaxanthin, proved to support inflammatory health without the side effects. And Xanthosin is a pure and highly absorbed form of astaxanthin, endorsed by doctors and healthcare professionals for superior health and anti-aging benefits, backed by 1,500 peer-reviewed papers and over 50 human trials. It's also potent. In fact, just 2 capsules of Xanthosin with a meal equals 6 capsules of other astaxanthin products. So enhance your supplement regimen today by adding Xanthosin to support your inflammatory health and longevity. You can find physician-endorsed Xanthosin at all GNC locations in Hawaii and the mainland, or order it online at xanthosin.com.
AM 690, The Answer, KHNR, Honolulu, a service of Salem Communications, on the NASDAQ at SALM, AM 690, The Answer.
Snow, snow,
snow,
snow,
snow.
It is David Snow on your radio. Welcome back to The Cure for the Common radio show. If you're just joining us, my guest is Gary Taubes, the author of The Case Against Sugar. Gary, if people are not able to listen to the entire show, and by the way, our show does rebroadcast tonight at 9 p.m. on the station you're listening to right now, but how can people get the books if they, or this book that we're talking about, and as well as your other books, if they want to obtain copies of them?
Well, The Case Against Sugar just came out in paperback, and it's available at most to all bookstores, Amazon, of course, because everything's available on Amazon. Yeah, my other books are certainly Good Calories, Bad Calories, and Why We Get Fatter are both available on Amazon and probably at the bigger bookstores.
Like Barnes & Noble. Yeah.
Like Barnes & Noble, college bookstores.
And is Bad Science, is that still in print?
I wish. But no, that was, I wrote that back and came out around 1991, 92.
Oh, okay, all right.
And, you know, it's interesting. I like to say all my books are about good science and bad science. I've written five of them now.
Mm-hmm.
But the first two, the first was on physics. I lived at the physics laboratory CERN outside of Geneva for 10 months. And I watched physicists screw up an experiment and discover non-existent phenomena. And my second book was, like I said, was called Bad Science. That was on the phenomenon called cold fusion.
Oh, right, yes.
Bad science fiasco of the 20th century.
Huh.
And those don't sell as well as books on nutrition.
Oh, okay, all right. Well,
same general theme, good science, bad science, how to do it right, how to, you know, sort of critical assessment of the data. But
well, the other things you just mentioned sound like another show we'll have to do with you at a future date. Hey, so let's talk about the different types of sugar. You mentioned fructose and sucrose. Of course, a lot of people think, oh, I don't eat any table sugar. I use honey or maple syrup or agave syrup or coconut sugar. Let's talk about some of these. What has the research uncovered that you've done on these other sugars? And
well, they're all variations on fructose-glucose combination.
The one thing they have in common is that they're all concentrated, right?
Yeah, the others are more concentrated. So that's the interesting thing because, you know, I don't like to say that the problem with sugar is we consume too much of it. It's like saying the problem with cigarettes is that people smoke too much of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they cause the diseases, if they cause obesity and diabetes, then what you say is, look, sugar causes obesity and diabetes, and the advice you give people is to avoid it, not to avoid eating too much, because you don't know what too much really means in that context.
Mm-hmm.
But we did consume enormous amounts of sugar because it's so incredibly useful. Same with high fructose corn syrup. It's got all kinds of properties that are useful for cooking and processing food other than the sweet taste.
That's right.
And then because it has no associated flavor, it's just sort of the essence of sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes in a form you could put in cold beverages as well as hot beverages, and you could bake with it. So, you know, the beginning of the 19th century, when sugar was very expensive, hard to come by, we were consuming in the United States a few to maybe 5 pounds per person per year. So it's like the sugar in a can of Coca-Cola every week.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of the 19th century, with the Industrial Revolution and the beet sugar industry is created, and then the candy and chocolate and ice cream industries are created, and then in the 1870s, 1880s, soft drinks come in, bottled soft drinks.
You know, right. 1886 is when John Pemberton, a pharmacist who was addicted to heroin, as I recall, he came up with Coca-Cola, and rest is history.
And they just explode in popularity. And so by 1900, the per capita sugar consumption or availability is about 90 pounds per capita.
Right.
And then by the end of the 20th century, when it peaks, it's at 155 pounds in the U.S. So the thing with honey and maple syrup, A, they come with other tastes, so they're not, you put them in, you've got to like that other taste to want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're viscous, you can't use them in cold drinks. You can only use them in hot drinks. And most people, whenever I say this, somebody says, well, I put honey in my coffee, a concept that horrifies me, but apparently there are some people who do it. certainly you could use it in tea.
Right.
It's just that you can't put it in cold drinks, so it's not something we've Americans ever we for about 100 years we've consumed a couple pounds of honey per capita per year, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And if sugars were to go away and be replaced with honey, you know, that number's certainly going to go up.
But not that much, huh?
But not that much, no. Because it's just not that useful.
Right, right.
Yeah. Agave syrup came in about 20 years ago after there was one of the many sort of conceptual mistakes made by the nutrition research community is they thought, so diabetes is a problem of not being able to control your blood sugar, either because you don't have enough insulin as in type 1 diabetes or you're resistant to insulin as mm-hmm. in type 2. So this concept of the glycemic index came in, and the glycemic index is how quickly you metabolize the glucose in the foods you eat and turn into blood sugar, and how quickly does it raise your blood sugar, and how
Correct.
High.
Yes, right.
So fructose, because it's metabolized in the liver, doesn't raise your blood sugar. Now, the problem is it's metabolized in the liver, and it's got all kinds of problems that ultimately, I'm arguing, would cause insulin resistance and so type 2 diabetes and lead you to have elevated blood sugar, but it doesn't do it immediately, so it's got no effect on glycemic index. So the idea came about that it must be good for you. And maybe you could consume it without the negative consequences that you get from consuming sugar. So agave syrup is very high in fructose.
That's right, yeah.
And low in glucose. But if the fructose is a problem in the liver, then agave syrup could be worse than sugar.
Precisely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I actually don't know. That's an interesting study because mm-hmm. the glucose stimulates insulin secretion. The fructose is metabolized in the context of this elevated insulin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's conceivable that the worst possible scenario is something that's 50-50, which means sugar.
Maybe, right, right.
Maybe a lot of fructose and less glucose is better. Maybe a lot of fructose and less glucose is worse.
Uh-huh.
I'd kind of bet on worse.
Well, and I think that the concentration is the key, right? I mean,
yeah.
No matter which sugar you pick, if you just blindfolded yourself and threw a dart at the wall and ended up on one of the sugars, you just have to treat each one with great moderation. I mean, you just and that's another
or
thing.
Or avoid it entirely.
Yeah. And the problem with American diets, don't you agree, Gary, is that people say, "Oh, everything in moderation." God, that just makes me ill when I hear that term.
Yeah, there's two phrases two words I hate that I also have now in this. One is moderation.
Yeah, right.
Because I'll have people listen to me lecture or invite me to do interviews and say, "I agree with you entirely," and then they'll say, "But so it's just eat it in moderation, right?" And it's like, no. The problem with moderation is defined by what lean, healthy people eat.
Mm.
So if you're lean and you're healthy, then you assume whatever you're doing is in moderation.
Yeah, right.
Unless you're a teenager, and then you could eat enormous amounts.
You get away with murder, yeah.
Yeah. And so then you assume that anyone who's not lean and healthy obviously isn't eating it in moderation, even though the people who aren't lean and healthy are often controlling their diets far more strictly than the lean, healthy ones, because they're desperately trying to figure out how not to be overweight, obese, and or diabetic, right?
Right,
so
right.
They're the
right.
ones who are, really desperately try and eat in moderation, and from the lean person's perspective, it's failing because they're still overweight, obese, or diabetic.
Yeah, yeah. So poison in moderation is still a poison, and organic sugar is still sugar.
Exactly.
So
that's
semantics.
I once had this conversation with the owner, the founder of Whole Foods.
Oh.
Go unnamed momentarily.
I know him, or I've met him.
But yeah, it's like, it doesn't do any good to sell organic sugar. The problem isn't whether it's organic or not. The problem is whether it's sugar or not.
Yeah, right, right, exactly. Yeah, it's like alcohol, organic alcohol, still alcohol, and same with sugar. Okay. Gary, we need to take just one more break to keep the lights on here and keep you on the air so that you can disseminate all the information, the valuable information you have to our thousands of Dr. Health Radio listeners. And when we come back, I want to ask you about time allowing, we'll talk about sugar substitutes, what you think of stevia and the natural sugar substitutes, as well as the artificial sweeteners, the not-so-natural aspartame and sucralose and other sweeteners that the food industry has embraced and used on a widespread basis, and what consequences to our health that those might have, as well as tooth decay and other the other drawbacks of sugar, and some alternatives. What do you recommend? Okay, back after this as we continue. Stick around if you want to stay healthy. I'm David Snow here on Dr. Health Radio.
A smooth flowing bloodstream is vital to good health. And one of the keys to maintaining that smooth flow is Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Kyolic accelerates circulation, revitalizes cells, and keeps blood platelets from sticking to each other or to artery and capillary walls. You see, the body produces an amino acid called homocysteine. If left unchecked, high homocysteine levels can become a serious health risk. Today, many health experts believe that homocysteine is more of a risk factor than cholesterol. And Kyolic is the only garlic supplement patented to reduce homocysteine levels, a major risk factor for arteriosclerosis and coronary heart disease. In fact, Kyolic is the only aged garlic extract. So get traffic moving smoothly along all your major arteries. Look for Kyolic. You'll find it where quality nutritional supplements are sold.
That makes you you. Where did you get that confidence that lets you look like you do? Oh, what a look. Yes, you're looking good. You take care of your teeth just like you should. Where did you get that smile, the one that belongs to you? Nothing looks so right than a smile that's so bright. Tell me, smile. You can smile so beautifully. Beautiful smiles are a specialty. Where did you get that smile? Beautiful smiles from Dr. Dennis Nagata.
Oh, I can't get it. I just can't get away from it. Another sugar song. Oh, my God. That's sickeningly sweet. Well, it is just before Valentine's Day, so what can I expect from my my producer there? Thank you. Hey, welcome back to the program. David Snow on your radio. Our guest is Gary Taubes, the author of the new book, The Case Against Sugar. Gary, are you going to eat any Valentine's candy in the next few days or weeks?
Probably not.
Oh, you're such a party pooper. Okay, well,
yeah.
even dark chocolate, what do you think of, I mean, if it's 90% or 100% dark chocolate, it's only a few percent sugar, so that would be healthy, right?
It would, yeah, I have a dark chocolate habit myself, and I consume 100% chocolate, and I have to say, when I tell my wife that I think there's a particular brand. They are now, a lot of artisanal chocolate makers make 100% chocolate,
right,
for 100% cacao chocolate, mm-hmm, for people like me. And I tell my wife this, one of them is particularly good. Her definition of that is that means it tastes like cardboard, but not bitter cardboard.
Have you had the new, well, it's not new, it's been around for years, and they're not one of my sponsors, but it's my favorite chocolate. It's Taza, T-A-Z-A. It's a Mexican style chocolate. It's stone ground. They grind the whole cacao bean, so you get the texture of the bean, the and plus all the phytonutrients, the extra polyphenols and everything.
Yeah, I think they, and I'm remembering, sorry, I hope I'm not doing them a disservice. They use sugar alcohols, right?
No, they don't. No, there are some sugar-free chocolates that use the erythritol, and actually that was my next question. What about mannitol and xylitol and erythritol, the sugar alcohols that are used for sweetening purposes? Have you done any research on that?
I personally don't like them, which is why I was raising the question, and I don't like that.
Well,
I'm one, Except the ideal thing is, you know, you get rid of your sweet tooth, which is hard to do because American food is so sweet. Even when you go to good restaurants, often, you know, foods that just don't have to be sweet are sweetened because our palates are used to that.
And they think that that's what it needs to sell. And by the way, I had my dentist extract my sweet tooth 3 times. It keeps growing back, that damn thing, you know?
It is. There's a definite slippery slope.
Right.
With once you start allowing yourself, or at least once I start allowing myself to cheat or, you know, there's a period, like we go back to the East Coast, we're in Oakland, but we go back to the East Coast twice a year to spend time with the in-laws, and my kids get a lot of sweets with their grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And
grandparents, of course.
That's what they do, right? And they're part of their job is to give kids sweets that their parents won't allow them to get. And then I feel it takes me 3 weeks to break them back to the level of sweets they get here.
Oh, wow, really.
Great moment when
they cheat on the sweet.
Yeah, it's crazy. Right. So anyway, yeah, the sugar alcohols and the artificial sweeteners in general, here's where I think a kind of dose makes the poison philosophy comes in. So again, one of the reasons I think sugar has done so much harm, as I said, is because we eat such huge amounts of it, and we eat and drink it all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So our body never stops having to process this thing. It's from the moment we wake up till, you know, our last bite of dessert, we are processing sugar in quantities that our liver specifically was never designed to deal with. These other artificial sweeteners, even, you know, the old ones like saccharin and the newer ones, tend to be hundreds of times sweeter than sugar itself.
Uh-huh. And same with stevia, the natural sweetener.
Yeah, so you consume it in much lower doses.
That's right.
So the equivalent, say today we're consuming 90 pounds of sugar per capita, the number is open to debate. It's a lot.
Right.
And you use a product that's 300 times as sweet, to get the same amount of sweetness, you're going to be consuming about a third of a pound per capita.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to believe that's not much healthier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is evidence that these artificial sweeteners trigger the same receptors in our oral cavities, the sweet taste receptors, and those receptors are elsewhere in our body as well, because our bodies are very efficient at reusing sort of the same tools.
And
so it's conceivable they stimulate some of the same responses.
So in other words, they can trigger insulin response or an insulin release, and then your body doesn't have anything, or the sugar never comes down, and then
you get hungry.
Right.
And that is a possibility. I don't find the evidence particularly compelling yet.
Okay, all right.
But
okay, so the jury's out.
The research is ambivalent, put it that way. The evidence is ambivalent. But
okay. And, you know, if it was just tooth decay that sugar caused, as far as its many ills, that alone would be reason to minimize it or eliminate it. But, I mean, it's just, you can connect it with almost every disease. It's kind of like smoking, you know. Sugar is the new smoking, if you will. They say sitting is the new smoking. Well, that's one of the S's, too, that you don't want to participate in much. But I mean, sugar, you know, and let's talk about dementia. You've done, you know, we talked about heart disease and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and obesity and diabetes, but even dementia. Tell us how sugar affects dementia and our brains, our minds.
Well, so this is the argument I make in the book, and dementia comes in the second to last chapter, the last chapter minus the epilogue, which is called the if-then problem, too. So here's the if-then problem. We have these epidemics of obesity and type 2 diabetes all over the world, and these are disorders of insulin resistance. And I'm arguing, as do others, you know, who aren't journalists, are arguing that sugar is the prime suspect for being the dietary trigger of insulin resistance. So you take any baseline diet, it can be, you know, an agrarian diet for some population living in the Himalayas, or a Southeast Asian diet where it's mostly rice, or, you know, the Native Hawaiian diet, or Native Americans on the Great Plains, or the Maasai in Africa eating, living on, you know, the cattle and milk, and you add sugar, and you end up with, diabetes, obesity. And then diabetes and obesity are associated with an increased risk of every other chronic disease, major chronic disease. So heart disease, cerebrovascular disease, cancer,
right.
and Alzheimer's.
Mm.
And in each of these cases, including Alzheimer's, so if you're obese and or diabetic, you're at increased risk of dementia.
Right.
And dementia can be stroke-related. Diabetics are at increased risk of stroke, and it's a diabetes-related or stroke, hypertension-related stroke. And then they're at increased risk of Alzheimer's per se, and then often in dementia, it's a mix of the two of them, and you can't really say what's causing it. But the point is, as research has evolved in all of these chronic diseases, the processes involved have been linked to insulin and to high blood sugar. So if you have a disorder that's working, a dietary ingredient that's working to cause insulin resistance, which means you can have elevated insulin levels and elevated blood sugar levels simultaneously, then it's going to drive up your risk of obesity and diabetes. If it's driving up dementia
as well. Yeah.
One of these two mechanisms and probably both.
Uh-huh. And then if you just follow a carbohydrate diet, even if it's complex carbohydrates, if you don't have enough fat and fiber and protein to balance that out and kind of buffer the release, because you mentioned earlier about potatoes or pasta, things like that, then that can also be a problematic diet, because your blood sugar is going to be elevated much of the time, whereas it wouldn't, excuse me, or it would, especially the postprandial blood sugar amounts or levels would be lower had you had some extra fat or fiber or protein with that carbohydrate, even if it's not a refined sugar per se.
Yeah. And that's kind of the dietary, my early work was, again, attacking these sort of dietary paradigms that grew up on. I didn't go out to attack them. I went out to study them, and then they seemed eminently worthy of attack the more you learned about them. But, again, since the 1960s, the reigning dietary paradigm in this country was a healthy diet is a diet that's low in fat, low in saturated fat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the competing, what I realized doing my research is there was a sort of competing belief system that was supported by what seemed to me a lot more compelling data, which is that the problem with modern diets isn't the fat content. You can eat as much fat as you want. The problem is the sugar and refined grain content.
So
you add sugar and refined grain to these. And the problem is when they started telling us to take fat out of products.
Right.
To eat low-fat products.
Yeah, you have to put something else to take its place.
To make it taste good.
Yeah, right.
Nothing else. And that ended up more often than not being some version of sugar.
That's right. Yeah, because it adds texture. It adds body and volume.
Mouthfeel.
Sweet.
It tastes
It's addictive, and it's even a preservative in the particular
This is the best thing that ever happened to the food industry.
I know.
It's like our government said, hey, get rid of all the naturally occurring fats because we don't like those anymore. And
put
in sugar, which is cheaper, and you could have a shelf life that'll last forever.
Well, did you hear me talk about the livestock? The farmers are now feeding cattle these sugar because it's a cheaper source of carbohydrates because of the rising corn prices. I mean, give me a break. That's even our meat has sugar.
You want to fatten up an animal, give it sugar.
That's right.
Sugar.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my other pet peeves is a lot of times you read studies. The New York Times did an article a few days ago, last week, about a high-fat diet in rodents increases risk of prostate cancer.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's crazy that they did this because, first of all, it's a rodent experiment.
Yeah.
Cardinal rule of journalism is never extrapolate from rodent research to humans. On top of that, and then for decades, these scientists have been feeding rodents what they call high-fat diets. So a rat in the wild will eat about 5% of its calories from fat, and in the laboratory it gets about 5-7% of its calories from fat. So now they give it a 60% fat diet.
Oh, boy.
And the rats don't want to eat a 60% fat diet, so they load it up with sugar.
Oh, I see.
So now they'll eat it.
Yeah.
But the researchers will still refer to it as the high
fat diet. Oh, that's very interesting. And the same with our food supply is that most high sugar foods often contain high fat and vice versa.
And vice versa. Yeah. Although they often are the ones that we're attracted to. And so yogurt is my iconic example.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You want to make low-fat yogurts, and the government told the industry in the 1980s, go out and make low-fat products so people can eat the low-fat diet we're recommending. So you take the fat out of yogurt.
And add 25 grams of sugar, I might add, 17 to 25 or 28, you know, almost a full ounce
and then,
of sugar.
And then advertise it as a heart-healthy diet. If you serve it in small portions, it's now a heart-healthy diet.
Well, did you hear, you know, you can actually lose weight on a chocolate cake diet? It turns out they used to think that chocolate cake has 400 calories. It only has four. Well, that's per molecule, so that if you only eat a couple crumbs, that's the key. Portion control.
The sugar industry always liked to say, they would say things like, you know, a teaspoon of sugar has less calories than a grapefruit.
Right,
they knew that
right.
People think about eating the grapefruit diet with one of these weird diets.
Yeah, I have.
Therefore, don't worry about sugar. And how did you pick a tablespoon? But again, the science, when you get into nutrition science, you got to put science in quotation marks.
Yeah, that's for sure. Nature, you know, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. I mean, nature trumps science every time. But Gary, we've run out of time. Thank you so much. Do you have a website where people can go to?
Well, my website is my name, Gary Taubes.
Taubes.
com, and my books are available everywhere. Fine.
All right. The Case Against Sugar, a new release. Best of luck on your new book and continued success on your Why We Get Fat book, as well as Good Calories, Bad Calories book. Right. We'll have to have you back to give us a review on those.
I'd be delighted. Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Gary. Hey, next hour, join us after the top of the hour of Fox News for Dr. John Ruckel, who has the latest information on inflammation and how to reduce yours, as well as our regular features next hour, The Fitness File, Sexual Health, and The Funny Bone Pharmacy, as well as Dick Allgaier's Health Report. So stick around for hour number two. And if you can't stick around, you can always listen tonight from 9 to 11 p.m. for our show, Saturday Night Healthy, here on AM 690 and FM 94.3, The Answer. I'm David Snow here on Dr. Health Radio. Hour number two coming right up after the top of the hour, Fox News.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.